This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. The Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games in Normandy gets underway this week, and later on we'll be hearing from Jessica Ranshausen, the former US chef d'équipe, as she previews the competition. Annie Morris has some ideas for the 10-meter circle in our trainer's tip segment. All of that is coming up on the show, but first, Stefan Hench, the executive director of the USDF, joins me now to tell us about the US Dressage Finals presented by Adequan, which take place in the Kentucky Horse Park from November 6th through the 9th. Stefan, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So, a big event coming up in November, just over 70 days now to the start of the competition. It must be very busy in the office getting ready for these championships.
It is, and this year being our second year, having our inaugural championship under our belts last year, we feel like we're much better prepared than we were at this time last year. But it's very exciting. Last year was very successful, and this year, building on that success, I think there's a great deal of excitement nationwide for the championships this year.
Explain the format to us, because it caters to all levels, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a national championship that showcases competitors in adult, amateur, and open divisions at training level through Grand Prix. So it's really an opportunity for competitors from all over the country, whether an adult, amateur, or a professional, to step onto the national stage and compete at the various stages of development, all the way from training level to Grand Prix. And that's really the first time that that opportunity has been available in this country. It's very exciting, and especially for the adult amateurs and for those competitors that compete in open classes that may not have the opportunity to compete on the world stage, but this gives them something to aspire to that didn't previously exist. Our USDF Great American Regional Championship program, which is for many years offered a regional championship in each of the 9 USDF regions across the country, now serves also as a qualifier for those competitors to aspire to go to a national final.
Tell us about the qualification process and how to not only qualify, but how to declare for the competition.
Well, if you compete qualify for one of the 9 regional championships across the country, then you have the potential to qualify for the U.S. Dressage Finals. And prior to competing at the regional championship or your relevant regional championship, we have one coming up here, the first one, September 4th. Which is the one of the first ones is in Region 4, and that championship allows someone to declare up until the start of that championship. So, for example, each competitor that would like to compete at the US Dressage Finals must first declare their intent to compete. And they need to do so by midnight on the day prior to the first day of their respective Great American USDF Regional Championship competition. And that would include any open classes before the start of the championship classes at that competition. So, and that's by midnight, the day prior to. So that's the first step, is to declare. Once you've declared, then after the championship, if you've met certain criteria, then you will need to also nominate, which is essentially a pre-entry, and that has to be completed 96 hours after the last championship day in your respective regional championship. And then ultimately, the competitor will need to enter by October 23rd, which is the closing date for the U.S. Dressage Finals.
And tell us about the new High Score Breeds Award, because that's new this year, isn't it?
Yeah, there's an opportunity. This year, we've asked those breed organizations that participate in the USDF All Breeds Awards program whether they'd like to also participate and offer a high score award for their respective breed and competitors riding a horse in that respective breed to qualify for a high score breed award. And we have over 20 organizations participating that will be providing nice prizes in addition to the normal prizes and awards given at the finals for the competitors finishing in the first through 10th place positions.
Well, of course, you mentioned the prize money there, but thanks are due, of course, to many of the sponsors. Tell us about the family of sponsors that you have involved, as well as the presenting sponsor, Adequan.
Well, first, let me say that we have $50,000 in prize money that will be equally distributed amongst all the divisions and classes. So training level adult amateur gets the same prize money as Grand Prix Open, for example. And Adequan is our presenting sponsor. Smart Pack and Stanley Premium Western Forage are our supporting sponsors. And Muriel, Dressage Today, Dietrich Equine Insurance, Premier Equestrian, Hodges Badge Company, and Haggard Equine Medical Institute are contributing sponsors.
Well, obviously, media coverage is very important to any championship, not least of all these finals that are still in their infancy. Tell us about the media coverage that you expect. I believe it's going to be streamed on the USEF network?
That's right. Last year, we had extensive coverage on USEF network on many of the classes, both the adult, amateur, and open classes. Not every class, but we had, I would say, about 10 hours of coverage last year on USCF Network, and we'll offer that again this year, and also some featured commentary by Kathy Connolly, who's a very well-respected trainer, judge, and competitor in this country, and very knowledgeable, and did the commentary last year and did a fantastic job, and we look forward to having her provide that commentary again this year.
Now, we all know it's November in Kentucky, so I believe we're going into the indoor arena, into the Alltech arena for this. Is there anything that takes place outside?
Yes. We actually, this year, are adding a championship ring to the three rings that we had last year. We have competition going on in the climate-controlled Alltech arena pretty much all day and into the evening. And that's where the trade fair is housed. That's where all the social functions take place and all the fanfare takes place outside of the competition. But the championship rings also extend to the outdoor rings at the Kentucky Horse Park that have high-quality footing, auto sport footing, and so forth. And then we also, in addition to the U.S. Dressage Finals classes, have Dressage in the Bluegrass Finals, which is a non-championship opportunity to compete that many of the championship competitors use as a warm-up class. But it's also open to competitors that may not be in the championships themselves, but would like to have the experience of the championships, or competitors that are bringing schooling horses or clients who may want to experience the event but haven't actually qualified for the finals, they can still compete at the U.S. Dressage and the Bluegrass competition, which is taking place under the same umbrella with the U.S. Dressage Finals. and offers classes each day.
Well, one of the things that obviously you're dependent on for the success of these finals is the generosity of volunteers. And people can sign up now right through to the competition, can't they, on the website?
Yes, they can. And all, pretty much all the information that you might need to know about the U.S. Dressage Finals can be found at usdressagefinals.com. And that is can be accessed either directly through usdressagefinals.com or through the usdf.org website as well.
And as you mentioned, there's lots of other activities as well for people who are not competing, the trade fair and the social events. So it promises to be quite an event there in November in the horse park.
Yeah, and Saturday evening we have a VIP dinner offering that people can sign up for. They don't have to be in the competition. And that's the freestyle night, and we have some featured presentations during that. And so that's a kind of a special evening, Saturday evening. And the trade fair is open Thursday through Sunday. And we have a competitors party on Thursday and a competitors dinner on Friday. And we do offer tickets for that dinner on Friday. So, you know, if you're a fan or want to come support your favorite rider or our family or whatever, there's plenty to do without. And then, of course, let's keep in mind this is taking place at the Kentucky Horse Park, which offers a great deal to do as well, such as the Museum of the Horse and so forth. So visit the Man O' War statue, and then, of course, the Lexington greater area has all the beautiful horse farms, and you can take a bluegrass horse farm tour or visit one of the watch a surgery taking place at Haggard Equine Medical Institute or one of the other equine hospitals. So that there are many activities that a person can engage in if they're not in the ring, so to speak.
Absolutely. Well, as always, lots to do in the horse capital of the world, Lexington, Kentucky. So those finals, the U.S. Dressage Finals presented by Adequan, will take place from November 6th through the 9th. And as Stefan said, that website is usdressagefinals.com, where you can get all the information you need to either participate or attend the finals. Stefan, thank you for coming on the program and telling us about it.
Thank you, Chris.
And now for our trainer's tip this week from Annie Morris.
Well, today I would like to explain the importance of a 10-meter circle and how to ride it. First of all, what is a 10-meter circle? It's a circle that's 10 meters. It's a good landmark because you can see when you're riding the 10-meter circle from the center line or from the long side, it goes to the center line. And, of course, when you're riding it at the short side at the letters A or C, it touches each quarter line. So it's a circle that's easy to see the size of. And the thing that's important about it is it's one of the first collected exercises you learn. So it can be done in the walk, trot, or canter. But it does require a degree of collection to perform it correctly. So in other words, the things that are required before you can ride the 10-meter circle are a basic grasp of all the aspects of the training scale, including the rhythm of the gait, the suppleness and relaxation. The horse has to be connected. You have to be able to control the impulsion and the straightness, which on the 10-meter circle, that is the bend of the body on the turn. Now, not the bend of the neck, not the bend only of the rib cage, but the entire spine of the horse would be bent along the line of the circle as viewed from the top, for example. And then, of course, collection, which means an increased amount of engagement. The horse can carry a little more weight behind to free the forehand. Of course, I'm not talking necessarily about Grand Prix collection. This is an exercise you use to improve your basic collection, and it shows up at second level. So it's actually the beginnings of collection show up when you're doing the 10-meter circle. I just wanted to mention for clarity what flexion is. Flexion is, I might mention lateral flexion, and that's the pole being flexed to the inside, not the body, not the neck, just the pole. And that's necessary to have an inside leg, outside leg connection. But when I talk about bend, I'm talking about the bend in the entire body. Why do we do the 10-meter circle? Besides improving the collection, which I already mentioned, it really shows you the correct bend for all lateral work. For the shoulder in and haunches in, that shows up at second level, as well as the half pass, which is at third level. These are all movements that have a 10-meter bend, and then they become lateral movements because the horse keeps that bend and goes sideways. As you move up the levels, the degree of bend increases, but the 10-meter circle is your basic amount of bend for all your beginning lateral work. The bend allows you to improve your inside leg to outside rein connection. This improved connection also allows you to have more precise and effective half halts. Again, it will increase the engagement, meaning the carrying power of the horse's hind legs, and free up the forehand to develop better gaits, which is basically the entire essence of dressage, is the development of the horse and his gaits. So let's talk about how we begin to ride 10-meter circles. Of course, you don't just wake up one day with the degree of collection to do it. You have to start in a working gait. And a movement that used to be in the first level test that was very useful was riding a half of a 10-meter circle and then returning to the wall, therefore making kind of a teardrop shape. And that's a movement that was that is performed at working trot that starts to develop that bend that you can ride more half halts and develop the collected trot. Once you have a feeling for the half halt, for the ability to collect, you can start to ride a complete 10-meter circle. There are two things that I love to do that really helped the 10-meter circles be improved. The first one is if you have a friend or instructor who's willing to hold a 5-meter lunge line and stand in the middle of your 10-meter circle, it is so revealing to ride around the circle on the lunge line. I mean, you think you're riding a 10-meter circle, you look at the track, and it looks like basically a circle, but the lunge line doesn't lie. If someone stands very still with a 5-meter lunge line and you ride around them, it's a perfect circle. And it's always kind of interesting, like, where does the horse fall in or out? Where does he kind of stick to the wall instead of continuing the turn? There are times when maybe the haunches swing out. There's all these things that can happen. But if you are a little bit persistent and making that circle perfect with the help of the lunge line, it'll help you ride off the lunge line. Another thing that I really, really like to do that not enough people talk about, but I find it to be incredibly important, is to count the strides in the circle. A 10-meter circle is made up of a specific number of strides. I mean, unless you're riding a tiny pony, most sizes of horses will fit 12 strides of trot and 12 strides of canter in a 10-meter circle. And one reason that counting them is fun is, first of all, you know exactly that the length of the stride is correct. So again, I said you can't ride a 10-meter circle in a working trot. The strides are too long to have the horse be balanced enough to make a turn that tight. So if you're getting like 10 strides in a 10-meter circle, your horse is probably falling on the forehand and kind of like pulling himself around that turn. If you're getting like 15 strides, maybe you don't have enough impulsion. The strides are short, but he's not actually completing each stride. What I find the most likely, though, when I start counting the strides in my circles, is that the first half is 6 strides, and then the second half is like 8. And that, again, comes down to the shape of the circle sometimes. Like, did the horse start to fall out on the second half? Or it can be that he lost the collection and just started taking short strides that didn't have the right amount of impulsion. In which case, maybe the trot needs to be a little bit refreshed on the center line or the top point of your circle. So those are two of my favorite exercises. Now, before I go on, I've just been talking about circles forever. Be careful if you're going to go out now and ride 10-meter circles. If you do a whole bunch, it's actually going to be bad for your horse's leg. You want to make sure you mix up the lateral work with the 10-meter circle work, with a little bit of medium work, just to keep the gait refreshed and not to overtire your horse. And that's especially important if you're counting strides or staying on the lunge line. You don't want to stay on that circle in the same direction for a long time because it's hard on your horse's legs. So besides those two exercises that are, again, my favorite, another thing I really like to do is ride 10-meter circles in the corners. Corners, which are a whole other can of worms, actually are made up of a quarter of a circle. And if you're riding basically every level up to fourth level, the corners can be a quarter of a 10-meter circle. So if you go to a corner and you don't like how your horse feels, you can just continue around the 10-meter circle and go through that corner again. And that really helps develop the collection and the half halt in the corner if you're doing a collected gait. And then, of course, since it's only a quarter of a circle at the lower levels, you still need to be able to ride the half halt at least for those few strides. Another important exercise that I would like is the 10-meter figure eight. If you start at one of the letters on the center line, you can do a 10-meter circle left, 10-meter circle right. And you can repeat that a couple times. Again, it's hard to make the circles round, and it's hard to get the change of bend and flexion on the center line, but it's an exercise that really can help supplement your horse. Again, do the 10-meter circles before and during your lateral work because it's the exact bend you need for the lateral work. Again, combine it with a little medium to refresh the impulsion. And another exercise, I've mostly been mentioning trot, but of course you can do all of this in the collected trot and the collected canter and also the walk. When I'm riding 10-meter circles in the collected canter, that's a lot of times when I'll teach the horse to really take weight behind because the tighter turn inclines him to collect more. And then as you're approaching the wall, you can teach the horse to do the canter to walk transition right there. Because you kind of have the wall to help you and the collection of the circle also to help him shift the weight back.
Jessica Ranshausen joins me now. She's formerly a chef d'équipe of the U.S. team, and she's going to preview this year's Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games in Normandy, which begins tomorrow here at Normandy with the first day of Grand Prix. But in the meantime, since, of course, the nominated entries and the definite entries were made, we have lost some leading contenders, and we'll talk to Jess about those, not least of all Totilus has gone out, Glocks Undercover has gone out, the Dutch have lost another combination, and it really has been obviously influential to this year's championship. So Jess, you know, what a start as we are about to get underway here in Com with these championships, and we've lost some key players.
I know. Well, all I can say is that it's a shame that Totilus has injured his splint bone and will not be part of the German dressage team, because I have to say I was happy to see how he looked this year in Aachen. You know, back in the years under Edward Gall, what I didn't like, and even from a judge's point of view, what bothered me was the overall overexpression of the front end of the horse in the trot and the lack of the same kind of expression behind. And only in the Piaf and the Passage did he match front and back. But in Aachen, I thought he looked much better. Do you suppose it's the German influence? And I don't know if I should laugh. And his 82.3% in the Grand Prix was just about right, I thought. So this better movement from behind makes him look more correctly powerful. So anyway, I am sure the Germans must be quite disappointed, and they will be looking to Helen Langenhagenberg to ride really well. So in Aachen, Damon Hill and Helen produced a really smooth, harmonious ride in the Grand Prix, scoring 81.2% and was second place overall. The horse is very regular and shows good expression in the trot work. The horse has a wonderful uphill frame, and the Piaf and Passage are very regular. I've always liked this horse. And Helen has a history with Damon Hill of being very consistent. So they must be happy with her, don't you think?
Oh, I think so too. I mean, now, of course, she's going to take the lead role in the team now that we've lost Totalis. So it's going to be pretty much even Stevens again with the Dutch going into the games because they've lost Glock's Undercover, although Edward Gall is going to be riding Glock's Voice instead. Not as experienced, obviously, as Glock's Undercover. But I think this is going to be, I think, pretty even keel, but the Brits are going to be the ones that are going to vie for a medal. It's going to be between
That's what
the
I think. Yeah. Now, so let's just look at Vallegro with Charlotte. They were looking very good, I thought. And I remember seeing him in Florida in 2012 and thinking to myself that he had great expression and looked much too strong, hanging and pulling. Holy moly, that girl. She has got such a strong back and such a strong core just from riding this horse. But now, that was not so much the case. And there's so much more harmony, and I think even more harmony than in London at the Olympics. So at the WEG, Charlotte will not have to worry about Totalis, but she must not make any small mistakes. And in Aachen in the Grand Prix, I noticed that sometimes Vallegro moves in the halt and looks a little runny in the canter half passes and also in the canter extension, and that might be a little from tension. And in Aachen, he also had a little loss of suspension in the extended trot. She had a 76.9 in the Grand Prix, but she recovered with a mistake-free ride in the Grand Prix Special, placing second with an 83.15, right behind Totalis, who, of course, won the class with an 84.52. So, you know, I think England and Carl, again, is riding a sort of newcomer, don't you think?
Yes,
and it could be a little up and down. I'm not exactly sure how completely up it will be.
Yes, Nip and Tuck, Carl Hester's partner, as you say, he doesn't have the depth of experience at that level. I mean, he's an up-and-coming horse for sure.
Yeah.
And they're going to be joined by Michael Ellerberg with Half Moon Delphi. And Gareth Hughes is making the team, which is great, on Senkens Nadonna. I mean, it's still a pretty good team. There's a lot of international experience with those four.
Oh, yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, and it's really, I mean, I'm really thrilled to think that that the British did so well in London and that they could give the Germans a run for their money. I would love us to do the same thing. We're not in that position right now, but that's the idea, you know. It's wonderful. So anyway, let's see. Now we have a newcomer with Isabel Wirth Mayer, Bella Rose. And this horse, I think, is interesting. She's quite long in the body, but she has great activity. She sometimes gets a bit croup high and looks a little low under the saddle. She's certainly a good performer and shows great expression in the Piaf and the Passage. There were a few mistakes in Aachen that look sort of like greenness. And Isabel says that Bella Rose is going to be the best horse she's ridden ever. Her score in Grand Prix in Aachen, 79.58, put her into fourth place. And in the special, she was again fourth with an 81.47. So she's definitely one to watch, at least for the future. I mean, not I mean, she's not going to be wasted on the team now. She's going to do very well for them, I think.
Well, we should also remind everybody of Isabel's track record at these games. You know, in the 24-year history of the games now, since 1990, mm-hmm. I mean, she won the individual silver with Gigolo in The Hague in 94 and the team gold there, and individual gold also in Rome in 98. And then, of course, in Aachen, she did mm-hmm. it again. She did the double, so you got team and mm-hmm. individual. And that was with Satchmo, of course. But then she came to Kentucky 4 years ago and was on the bronze medal winning team there with Vorm
Licht.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So an amazing record there by Isabel. And they're going to need her score, obviously, more now with having lost Totilus, because it will be down to, I think, Isabel and Helen.
Helen Hagenberg. Yeah, well, no, I certainly don't ever doubt that the Germans will be there ready to go.
Absolutely, but let's go back to the Dutch and let's not forget that Adeline Cornelissen and Jerik Paasevel will want to put those demons from Kentucky behind them as they go into these championships.
Yeah, I mean, good heavens, who knows what exactly. I mean, she had blood in the mouth and then they had to excuse her. So that was really a shame, or blood anywhere.
Yeah.
But they had a very good 80% Adelinda in Aachen, placing third in the Grand Prix. Adelinda and Paasevel are very experienced. I mean, that's going to be a very good thing for them.
For sure. So the medals really, I think, it's not rocket science, is it? It's going to be down to the big three now, which are Germany, the Netherlands, and Great Britain. But I would think that we're going to see that the Brits in the silver medal position. Would your money be on them now, given what's happened to the Dutch team?
Yeah, I would say that. And isn't Michael Eilberg is going to be on the half moon horse?
That's right. Yes.
He placed eighth in the freestyle in Aachen with an 80.4%.
Yes.
So, I mean, he's going to be able to help the England score stay up.
He is. That's a lovely mare, the grey mare.
Yeah.
Half Moon Delphi.
Half Moon. Yeah.
Yep. So I think we've got a real ding-dong of a competition there between the big three. Now let's go to the American squad, because we've got some rookies on that squad as well as some experience and some with more. It's quite a combination there, isn't it? Bit of a mix.
It is. Yeah. Well, of course, we have Laura Graves on Verdades. And she will certainly be someone to watch. She has so many nice movements and overall has great energy. The trot work is fluid, nice expression in the half passes. The passage is nice and regular. But in the Piaf, she has to make sure he stays straight and with enough forward expression so that he stays regular in front and not too close behind. Sometimes he's a little single track behind in the Piaf. When those things are good, he has a really good Piaf. So in Aachen, in the Grand Prix, she was 13th with a 73%, and she was 8th in the Grand Prix special with a 74.78%. And I think this girl will just improve under Robert Dover's eye. She had a great start with Ann Gribbins and later with Debbie McDonald. And I have to say, from her rides at Gladstone to the ones in Aachen, I already saw some good improvement. So I think her scores will improve with all this European experience. She certainly is going to be a rider to watch for the next Olympics. So, you know, she's a good start. She's a good newcomer, but the judges like her, and that's very important. So then, of course, we have Stefan, who gave us a real shock when we heard about him having pneumonia. Verden was the first outing for Stefan after being hospitalized. And in Verden, in both the Grand Prix and the Special, Legolas was overall expressive in the Piaf and Passage, but could have been a bit more elastic in the trot extensions. The half passes were smooth, and the canter pirouettes were active behind. He's very nice about that. He keeps a very good canter stride behind. And we can count on Legolas to give a solid performance. And with scores in, until now anyway, in the upper 70s. I know and love Stefan, and have been chef de cuisine for him from his first Olympic experience in Atlanta through his huge success in 2009, winning the World Cup final in Las Vegas, and being the CDIO champion in Aachen. It was the first time an American had won all three classes in Aachen, and I was thrilled to be there with him. As I'd won a class in 1959 and one in 1960, and Robert had won a class there as well, but this was a historic success for the U.S., winning all three. So, Stefan will be a wonderful leader for our WEG team, and Robert, I'm sure, will count on him with confidence. So, those are our two, the ones that I hold with, you know, good expectation, let's put that. And then we should talk about our other two riders, Adrian Lyle and Tina Cognat, and both were part of the London Olympic team. And Adrian rode the Grand Prix in Aachen and placed 22nd with a 70.34% and tied for 10th place with Laura Graves in the freestyle with a 76.9. So Wizard in the show arena showed good trot extension and good expression overall in the trot. Sometimes in the trot half pass to the right, he loses a little rhythm. I don't know if you've seen that. But to the left, it's always much better. In the Piaf, he doesn't stay enough on the place, and he tends to interfere a little bit behind. And maybe that's why she moves him more forward. The passage overall is good, but sometimes he shows a small little hitchy-like step with the right hind leg. She also has to be a bit careful in the walk to keep him stepping with regular strides in front. But this is, you know, a very elegant pair. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, important scores, though, for the team, whether they will get into that fourth slot, as they've done so often at World Equestrian Games.
Yeah.
You know, hard right. to break that barrier to get on the podium, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Now, Robert has chosen Tina Cognat, we should mention, and a collective of five as a team member, and they certainly are very experienced. This stallion is very expressive and powerful with good gaits and strong Piaf and passage and quite a busy tail. But, you know, the thing is, it's what also, let's see, the thing is really how evenly, correct and well-placed the riders will be for the team for doing, well, you know, they're all trying to qualify for the Olympics. So not all of them, of course, but, you know, the ones that are not Great Britain or Germany or Holland, but the rest. So anyway, if you look at the scores, the team scores in Aachen, they were very, very close, except, of course, for Germany, who had 2.43. But look at, second was Holland with a 2.23. Third was Spain with a 2.20. Fourth was Great Britain with a 2.18. Fifth was Denmark with a 2.16. And the U.S. had a 2.13. And Sweden had a 2.09. So all of those in the teams could exchange places very easily, don't you think?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, that's what's so interesting now. It is so close at the top. There's hardly any change between the currencies of those top riders now.
Yeah. So at the WEG, for the team competition anyway, you know, it comes down to how awake the judges are on the first day. And if they judge what they really see on that day, most chefs will put their, I don't mean week under bad week, but just less scoring horse-rider combinations on the first day and save the best two riders for the second Grand Prix day, because the placement of the teams is very important. and at the first day people can get good scores to keep their team placed high enough to qualify, you know, to go on. The team competition is so important, and I just can't tell you how the judging is so influential there. And you know, years ago when we talked about 1988, and I told you that we had one fiery riders get together because we were damn tired of the judges seeing the less important, I'll put it that way, the less important riders on the first day, and the damn judges are asleep. And then what happens is the second day becomes too important because those better riders are then having to pull out enormous scores because the first day the judges haven't been judging the way they should. So that, to us, was really, really made us very angry. And after the 88 Olympics, for a while, the FEI ruled that you would start from zero in the Grand Prix, and the riders would be picked just, off the team placements. You'd have the teams first. You have the first, second, third, you know, that you would draw that. Where the teams would be placed, and then you draw the riders on each of the teams. But you don't have the chefs putting the riders in the order they want. So we had Anki on the first day. We had Isabel a couple times on the first day. And, I mean, the judges had to stay awake. They couldn't just fall asleep and somehow or other just kind of cruise through the first day. So that was really, really important. And then they went back to allowing the chefs to put the riders in the order they want.
We should point out who the grand jury are. That's going to be Isabel Joudet from France, who is the president. Canada's Elizabeth McMullen, Susan Huvenals from Australia, Stephen Clark from Great Britain,
Clark,
Lisa
England.
Mark Four from America, Dietrich Pluwer from Germany, and Francis Verbeek from the Netherlands. It is 2 days of competition, as always. There's four riders, four horses on each team, and there are three separate competitions and three sets of medals. The Grand Prix, as we said, starts tomorrow on Tuesday.
Well, yeah.
And then the medal-winning teams will book their first team spots for the Rio Olympic Games in 2016. Now, the Grand Prix special will take the top 30 places from the Grand Prix, and then the top 15 will go through to the Grand Prix.
The freestyle, and they'll do the individual medals off that. But you have to remember that what's interesting, too, is that we are lucky, because the FEI some time ago gave the Pan American Games status for qualifying for the Olympics. So that, for all of our continent, North and South America, is lucky.
Right, well, let's round this up then, Jess, with your predictions for the individual medals. We've talked about the teams. Who's going to be on the podium for the individual medals?
That's going to be good. Well, I should suspect that Helen Langenheimberg should be. Besides, I love her horse, so I want her to be there.
All right, that's good.
And I think Britain, oh, yes. I think Charlotte should be on there. Who else would you like to see on there?
I'm asking you.
I don't know. The slot is open. The slot is open. Other than those two, the slot is really pretty much open. I would love to have Stefan up there, but I'm afraid that this horse is not quite, I don't know if he will grow into that kind of position, but he still is not, in my opinion, quite the powerful Eiffel that I would love to see Stefan on.
I think it's going to be between Isabel and Adelinda. Either of those could.
I would say. And, you know, it wouldn't be wrong for Adelinda. She has done wonderful things with Parzival and has really been there. been there and done that, but I think you're right.
For sure, it's going to be an exciting competition, and want to thank you very much indeed for coming on the program, Jess, and giving your predictions. And you can follow the WEG blog on our website at usdf.org, and also find more information on the Normandy site at normandy2014.com. All the action from Normandy will also be featured on FEI TV. This podcast is available for download from iTunes to your smartphone podcast apps. And don't forget to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, at usdf.org. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.